right back here on Sports Byline Broadcast, Sports Overnight America, iHeart, tune in around the globe on the American Forces Network. Very grateful for our next guest, Ann Liguori, noted broadcaster, a pioneer, really, when you think about it. WFAN back in 88, Emmett's Broadcasting. You know, we've had Jeff Smullyan on, and Ann's name came up, obviously. You know, you had Gumbel, Lampley, you had all the people that contributed to the show are all FAN alum. We hear from golf, the Masters. Her Masters reports with Mike and the Mad Dog were legendary. You know, Steve Summers in the overnight, we'd listen to Ann Liguori emanating from Augusta National. All the majors and tennis, too. And again, she is an outstanding person and broadcaster. And we want to talk about her book a little bit later on in this segment, Life on the Green, her latest lessons and wisdom from Legends of the Golf. By Ann, and a forward by another iconic broadcaster, Jim Nance. Ann, Marty, Terrell, thank you for popping on. I was there a week ago. I'm back in New York tomorrow. I can't wait to get there. The Mets are in town. The tennis is coming to a crescendo. Welcome aboard. How are you, Ann? Thanks for some
Marty,
time today. How are you?
Introduction. I have to hire you to do more.
Well, you deserve
like
it.
That. I love it. Well, you were in New York, and I didn't get to connect with you?
I know, and I'm going to be at Flushing Meadows tomorrow. I can't wait. I love it. I cannot wait.
Good for you. I
truly do love it. Now, are you there right now, or give us a lay of the land?
Yeah, I will be. I've been there most of the week, but not like in the old days. I was doing updates for FAN every 20 minutes, so for two straight weeks, literally 14 days, from 11 a.m. till like it was over. I was in the booth in the Ash Court, overlooking, you know, in the stadium court, overlooking the Ash Court way up there, in on the lower level broadcast wing, and I could never leave that booth. So that went, gosh, I hate to tell you how many U.S. Opens I've covered. It started in 1982 when I first came up to New York out of college. I worked as a statistician for HBO. Remember when HBO Sports had the rights to the U.S. Open?
100%.
And I literally was in.
100%. Yep.
Yeah, it was before, you know, all the other networks took over. But I was in the truck, the production truck, keeping score. And every score that you saw on the screen was because I was watching the matches inside that Chiron truck and telling the Chiron operator what to put up on the screen. So if I blinked and missed a score, then everybody got the score wrong at home. And so that was a lot of pressure for a kid right out of college.
No question about it.
I started covering for ABC Radio Sports Network. And then when WFAN started back in 1987, I started doing updates from the Ash Court. The Ash Court wasn't even there. It was the Louis Armstrong Court back then. It was like that press box that almost looked like it was going to fall over, right? And I was doing updates from there every 20 minutes. So, yeah, it's been many, many years at the U.S. Open. So long answer to your question, I am not there today, but I will be there for the women's semifinals and the rest of the way out. So there you go.
I can't wait. And I'm gonna run out there real quick. I might even take in the Mets Reds after the action Friday night, and then get back to Iowa for Iowa State on Saturday. So it's gonna be a great sports weekend. And with all these top seeds getting knocked out, I thought, yeah, you know what? They've lost the storyline. Couldn't have been more wrong. Draper today. Tiafoe last night, unbelievable. The injury, the hammy for Dimitrov, devastating to watch. Draper today, I'm really pulling for, and I shouldn't say this, but Emma Navarro, I want to see her. I would love to see her, a year after Coco in the United States, and then to have Navarro. There are plenty of storylines, and this is a monster. People are paying ungodly amounts of money to belly their way through the turnstiles there. Give me your take on this year's Open so far.
Oh, I just think it's so exciting because, as you say, the storylines are plentiful, especially for the Americans. We are actually going to see an all-American showdown in one semifinal in the men's on Friday, and it's the first Grand Slam semifinal between two American men since 2005. at the U.S. Crazy. Open when Agassi beat Jeanette. And it's the first time an American male will then obviously become a Grand Slam singles final since Andy Roddick back in 2009 at Wimbledon. So that's exciting to see. You know, and I've covered these two kids, I call them, Taylor Fritz and Francis Tiafoe. They seem like they've been around forever because they start so young, and I've covered them for so long. But, you know, they're breaking through now because, you know, obviously the big three are no longer, well, obviously with Djokovic, who got knocked out, but Roger Federer, it was always Roger Federer, or it was always Nadal, or it was always Djokovic. Now the way it right. is, with these guys out, unfortunately, Djokovic, I wanted him to go for 25 Grand Slam titles. I think that's a great story, and he's just an incredible athlete. You know, sorry to see him out. But it's you know, we're going to have an American male finalist for the first time in a long time. And then, as you mentioned, the women, the American women with Jessica Pegula, who's looking for her first semifinal in a major, and then Emma Navarro yesterday, boy, with you know, earlier in the tournament, she upset Coco. And then yesterday she had a great win. So we'll see. She's just having a career year. And needless to say, they come from very wealthy families, right? Did you notice that? With Pegula,
yeah.
Pegula's father and her family owning the Bills and the Sabres, and but yet she, you know, you can never tell that she's privileged financially. You know, she's a real down to earth girl, as is Emma Navarro, which she's the daughter of a billionaire. Ben Navarro, yes. I just think the storylines, as you mentioned, are really, really compelling.
I'm excited. And then some friends over in the UK are in New York, and they are thrilled. And I didn't know Draper from Adam, but, I mean, they love this kid. They absolutely love Jack Draper. And I had a sense he might come up big today, but a straight set victory, I did not see that coming down the pike. Did you? Because he beat a heck of a player.
Not at all.
He really did.
But, you know, he's seeded 25th. It was a huge upset over Demonauer, who's seeded 10th. And, again, it's another breakthrough in the draw. But, you know, he'll have an interesting semifinal match against top seed Jannik Sinner, who just has the most incredible forehand since, you know, the big three. And so, yeah, I just think it's very compelling. We'll have Sinner against Draper, and then Taylor Fritz against his childhood friend, Francis Tiafoe. So, I don't know. It's going to be a tough one to pick. I mean, Sinner's just so good. So, but, it's, you know, I'd love to see one of these young American guys get through for sure.
Yeah, I was pulling for Tommy Paul, but he, like you said, Sinner, and I know it's controversial, the cream, and, you know, Barry Bonds said he used cream too, and he got his rear end booted out of baseball, basically, and wore the scarlet letter and hasn't entered Cooperstown. But I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. I don't. What I do want to touch on is golf in your book, Life on the Green. What a great summer read, and we could go through it, but I want to reference back to the book, but I want to get your take because it's topical and you are highly and uniquely qualified to answer this because you are so well respected. And I'm sick about what's happened to the PGA Tour. I didn't like moving the PGA on the calendar. That disaster, in my opinion, this past weekend with guys starting out at 10 under, a guy starting at 2 under has no chance to win. They hand out $8 million Player of the Year awards. I don't want to get controversial, but I don't recognize the PGA Tour. Monahan's an easy target right now. I do not recognize this tour. And it started with, in my opinion, on moving the PGA. We need a major right now. We need a major this time of year. And so we know that
you're talking
the Masters
about,
is April.
You don't like the FedEx Cup format is what you're saying, the Tour Championship.
I don't.
Is that what you're
I
saying?
Don't.
Yeah.
The
format is tough to understand and follow. However, Scottie Scheffler was leading in the points heading into the Tour Championship, three times. And it was only this year where he was able to pull it out and win. So he got that advantage, you know, that two-stroke advantage at 10 under. in the past and wasn't able to win. Remember when he was up by six shots when Rory McIlroy beat him a number of years ago to win, you know, the FedEx Cup title.
True.
So
true.
I guess in defense of that format, once you kind of understand it and see it, it's interesting. I kind of warmed up to it. So if that's what you don't like, I can understand it. A lot of people think it's kind of weird that, you know, these guys would go in with extra shots, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little confusing. But I thought the year was great in golf as far as, you know, Scottie Scheffler's season and Xander Schauffele breaking through and winning two majors in the same year. I mean, that was great. But I think what we see, what bothers me is that if it's not a signature event, Marty, then you're not seeing top name players. And the signature events are paying so much money. These guys are making so much money that I think that, and the confusion of why there are so many tournaments where you don't have star players, I think that is what has turned off the golf fan. And I think that is why, perhaps, the ratings for the PGA Tour is down. Now, I know viewers are watching sporting events differently now. It's not always on television and cable. They're streaming and they're getting their sports, you know, from a variety of different menus. But I do think it had the greed of and the money and the talk about, you know, unification and paying loyalty money to the PGA Tour players who stuck around and you know, what do we do with the $3 billion that the Saudis want to invest in the PGA Tour, if that ever happens. Who knows if that will even happen. But I think all of that has really turned off golf fans.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, and you made a good point, you did, but I didn't like it when they moved the PGA. I don't know. I guess I'm getting older because I look at it this way. The beauty of tennis, we know. Look, the Aussie Open is going to be lined up against the Super Bowl, okay? We know where Roland Garros and the French Open is going to fall. We know it's going to be strawberries and cream over July, right around July 4th. We know it's Wimbledon, and we know the U.S. Open is going to come to a head on Labor Day weekend. Tennis gets it. Golf should have left it alone, but that's just my opinion. What I do know about your book, though, I'm looking at all the people that you talked about in your book, and it's not the last thing I think about when I look at these names, but money isn't front and center. And you did an outstanding job. You really did, because I've met Gary Player. He is a mensch. He is a wonderful man. Guy does about 1,000 sit-ups a week or whatever. He's or 1,000 a day. Alcott, Crenshaw, Harrington, Langer, Lopez, the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus. It's not about money. It's about life lessons and, you know, some wisdom. And that's why this book stood out. And I'm not killing Feinstein. John's written some great books on golf. This one struck a chord with me. Excellent job. What made you take
really
this approach with this book?
Seriously,
this is the truth.
Lessons and wisdom from legends of golf. I really delve into the values that have propelled these legends to the top. Humility, integrity, sportsmanship, resilience, relentless preparation, work ethic, the very qualities that drive success, not only on the green, but in the corporate world, on and off the course. It appeals to men, women, boys, girls, golfers, non-golfers, business leaders. You know, Gary Player talks about, you know, pursuing passion above all else. Nancy Lopez emphasizes the power of positivity and how important it is to be positive in life and on the golf course. Dottie Pepper, she talks about meticulous preparation and how crucial that is for anything you do and want to succeed in. Annika Sorenstam, she talks about the importance of patience on and off the course and the fact that there are no shortcuts to success. Ben Crenshaw talks about treating people with respect. Tom Watson, he shares incredible stories of picking great role models as mentors and how he picked Arnold Palmer, Byron Nelson, and Jack Nicklaus as his mentors and role models. And, it, you know, it just the content's incredible, right? I mean, I just ask the questions and had the time with these 12 legends, six men and six women, and the material, I just thought, is extraordinary, and all of us can benefit from it because it's inspirational and uplifting.
Well, I know we're short on time, and I want to not even ask you on the air, but we are going to put out a request for you because there is a topic I want to get into it with you. And we have some women on our staff, including a young lady who's a wonderful talent down in Dallas-Fort Worth. But when I think of women in broadcasting, of course, I think of Melissa Ludke-Lincoln and Andrea Kramer and Leslie Visser and Lisa Olson and yourself, obviously. Remarkable women figures, but